welcome to Open Mic here on Morehead State Public Radio. I'm your host, Leanne Akers, and today we're visiting with the mayor of Morehead, Laura White Brown. Thanks so much for being here.
Thank you for having me.
We want to talk a little bit about the regular city council meeting that happened on Monday night. First of all, before we get into the agenda, we just want to touch base really quick. There were some folks out from the North Fork Mobile Home Park that were protesting the sale of that facility. You and I have discussed in the past that that's a private sale. But there has been some criticism from the city for and the county for helping create the TIF district that kind of ushered in that sale. The creation of the TIF district allows the developer to get some tax incentives, I guess you would say, in order to create what they plan to create. But the city is receiving this backlash and this criticism from members of the community. Tell me a little bit about where the city stands on this particular issue.
You know, I think you can kind of look at it in a couple of different aspects. One, from my position as a person and also in my official capacity, I'm very empathetic towards anyone who has to move and has to relocate if they weren't planning on it. It's hard for anyone and everyone, especially during a pandemic. So I feel for people going through that situation. At the same time, it is, like you said, a private property sale. The city has absolutely no authority or jurisdiction over sale of private property. The city cannot contribute money to individuals who are affected by sale of private property or individuals in any capacity. But one thing that we have really tried to do as a city in collaboration with the county is to make sure that resources are available and easily accessible for people who are having to relocate. So what that looks like from us are list of resources that have vacant property or places that are taking mobile homes that could be moved into their area, any type of home or apartment that is available for rent as well. We've also worked very closely with Frontier Housing to kind of streamline any donations coming in. So Frontier Housing has set up an application process that individuals can apply for funding, financial aid, and resources to help with their moving costs and expenses. I believe there's around $30,000 that has been donated as of now, and most of those are anonymous donations. So we really appreciate people that are contributing to that to provide help for those in need.
I think a lot of the concern comes with people not really understanding how a TIF district works. I know that that is a very complex conversation in explaining to people exactly how it works. But can you give me like a really simplified version of what this new TIF district means?
I will sure try. So one thing we're learning as a city, and I'm learning as well as you go through TIF projects. So what the TIF stands for is it's a tax increment finance. They're very, very popular in areas like Louisville and Lexington, and you're starting to see them in Western Kentucky and kind of more Eastern Kentucky communities as well. But what the project does, or what the ordinance does, so to speak, and it was passed on December 14th, City Council passed that unanimously, as well as the fiscal court. But the city was approached by a private developer earlier in 2020 who said, this is the area that I'm looking at, the development that I would like to see, and gave us some projections on numbers. When they first approached us, their kind of proposal or question was, would City Council entertain the idea of creating a TIF district? So what that does is it dedicates a certain percentage of increased property taxes on a specific area. So for this case, it would be the area of the North Fork Mobile Home Park. There's some acreage below that property as well that was included in this. I believe that's mostly hillside, but it backs up to the community park. So kind of the area right there off of 32 going down into the park as well. But what we did was we committed a percentage of our property taxes based on any increase that comes on that property. So what it ends up being, this is around a $30 million project. That will all be funded by the developer, but there is the opportunity with a TIF district for the city to reimburse up to $11.7 million over a 30-year time period, only towards infrastructure, though. So if the developer meets certain standards, brings in X amount of jobs, kind of depending on, you know, what those items were in our ordinance and in our agreement, the city can reimburse back to that amount. Now, this is not money that we're just sitting on. This is not money that we're just writing a check for. This is money that if the development happens, it will create that revenue. And so we would put that back into the project itself.
Now, there has been some discussion. There are some empty retail spaces within a similar area, and particularly down near Tractor Supply. There's a few empty buildings down there. There's some up in the Kroger Center. There's some empty retail space. Is there any discussion about development of those properties at this time?
We have not had developers approach us about that. And again, this project was a private developer who approached us, as well as the landowner. I know that a lot of people think, or it's easy to think, we're just doing this because we want, you know, we want all of these new things to come in. But anyone that is interested in a TIF project can address City Council. They're very, very open to this. And this is our second one within city limits. So the community and leadership is becoming more familiar with how they work. So I think, you know, if anyone wants to try that, the city is very open to those proposals.
And speaking of new businesses and developments within the city, let's go ahead and touch base on those. I've seen some more activity happening up by the Starbucks, the new Starbucks that's going in behind Cracker Barrel. Is there a projected opening for that particular facility?
I think their initial project timeline was to open in April. The last update that I received was they've pushed that back to May, but they are working on the interior now. So I think it will be opening very, very soon.
And then since we're talking about building, the project on Main Street for the new 911 and police facility is well underway. It seems like every time I go past that part of Main Street, there's a lot of activity. So what's happening with that project?
They're pouring concrete this week, so that's reassuring. And I think now we're really going to see things happening as far as what you would expect to see with a building. And we had an update from the construction managers at City Council this week, this month. And they're continuing to have monthly meetings and updates internally with our people as well. But they're a few months behind, and we kind of expected that because as they broke ground, of course, they ran into issues that were unexpected. So I think we're about a month behind right now, but that would put us May 2022 of opening that facility. Mm-hmm.
And I know that with those types of projects, it's not like building a house, because you can see that happen a lot faster. But, you know, with those types of facilities, there's a lot of steps and there's a lot of regulations that have to be followed. And it's almost like you have to have a meeting for every single piece of the process.
You do. And one thing that I did not know or did not realize was because it's a building for emergency services, there are so many additional requirements, and like a storm shelter and different things that you really have to have specific engineers for to design that. And so it ends up being many more steps than you would take to build a home.
As far as the City Council meeting goes, you discussed some updates from MCTCS, from Morehead State University. I know both those organizations are planning to try to return to kind of normal operations, pre-pandemic looking operations in the fall. How is City Council thinking about that? I mean, I guess your organization is doing the same.
No, I think it's really exciting to look towards the fall. We have so many people, you know, locally and people that commute in and out of our community that are getting vaccinated. So that kind of adds this additional layer of security. I think as more students and faculty for both institutions start to come back to the community, we will see a boom in downtown business and local restaurants. And so that's exciting to see. We want to see people on Main Street. We want to see people outside when the weather's good. That's what builds a community.
I know there was a food truck out on Bats and Oats on Monday night that I went down and enjoyed. There's been a lot of people who are enjoying the weather and spending time on the new picnic tables down at Bats and Oats. It was really crowded down there on Friday, but still safe and spread out and socially distanced. There was a lot of families, a lot of diversity in the people that I saw down there. And that's something that the city council is continuing to discuss as far as the entertainment destination center.
You are correct. There was a very lengthy discussion about the area during the budget workshop in April, but also during this month's city council meeting. And city council made a motion to move ahead with a purchase for a stage for the entertainment area. That's not a stage that will be committed necessarily to Bats and Oats. It's mobile. It kind of looks like a truck that just unfolds. And so it will be available to rent by the public. And then we will be able to use it in multiple areas, whether that's at the splash pad during the summer or by the baseball fields when they're having games or when there are special entertainers downtown, Freedom Fest, festivals like that. It's really going to have a lot of use. And so I know that City Council is very excited to add that piece to the area as well.
I know there's been some discussion about purchasing a stage for the city to purchase a stage for quite some time, but that stage that you just described doesn't sound like one that we have discussed in the past. This is a different one.
So this is a stage that a committee of downtown organizations and a few city council members found. They've spent a lot of time researching this, and I believe it's coming from Kansas. So this is a company that creates stages specifically for purposes like these. We're excited to see what it will do for downtown.
Will be interesting. And when do we expect that to show up?
July.
Hopefully in time for Freedom Fest. If that gets to happen this year. On that note, we're going to take a quick break here on Open Mic. We'll be right back after this.
A message from Round County Judge Executive Harry Clark.
It's time to expand internet access in rural Round County. There is funding available to help us bring good internet speeds into the hills and hollers. But if we don't do it now, it may never get done. Visit speedtest.ky.gov to take the test from your home today. If you don't have internet at your house, you can call our office at 606-784-5151 and we'd be happy to help you complete it. This is our chance to bridge the digital divide here in Round County. So please go to speedtest.ky.gov and complete the test. Let's not pass this opportunity up.
We're back here on Open Mic here at Moorhead State Public Radio. I'm your host, Leanne Akers, and today we're visiting with Moorhead's Mayor, Laura White Brown. Laura, thanks again for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
We're talking about the regular City Council meeting that happened earlier this week for the month of April. Quite a few things on the agenda, but one of the main things that the Council has been discussing is the budget. The special budget workshop was last week, and there's been a lot of discussion on how to allocate funds for the upcoming 2021-22 fiscal year. July 1 is the start date. Before we get into the particulars, what's the time frame? When are you hoping to actually have this budget ready to vote on?
Our plan is to have the first reading of the budget in May. That's typically the timeline that we follow. Knock on wood, we're a little bit ahead of schedule right now. We've been working on this since the end of January, tried to to be a little proactive with planning this year. So our plan and intent at this point is to have the first reading at the May City Council meeting.
Now, the last year has been unprecedented. We've all dealt with the pandemic in many different ways, and municipalities and government entities have been hit hard because a lot of revenue was gone during the shutdowns, and that affected the 2020 to 21 budget a lot more than the year before, obviously. But going into the next year, it's kind of hard to plan because you don't really know the revenue. Like, you know what you got pre-pandemic, but we've lost businesses. There's a lot of change that has happened. And at this point in the planning stages, what is the overall amount for the full year budget? Or is that even where you are yet?
We're not to that point yet. And what we're kind of waiting on right now are some final numbers from CARES Act funding and safety reimbursement funding that just came out of, well, really came out of the Trump and Biden administration. So we're waiting on final numbers for those allocations. We have received some CARES Act initial money. We know that there's another round coming. There's been some discrepancies on what amounts will be allocated to our city. So we're waiting on those. That really impacts our planning pretty significantly. We're not including those numbers in our current proposal because they're apt to change from what we've heard now. And there's also not official guidance on how that money can be used. So that determines a lot for planning purposes. When COVID did start, we reduced our projections in our budget by 20%. We've kind of held on to that number for planning purposes. We rather under budget than over budget. And so that's something that I feel more comfortable with. Right now, what we have really been doing is going department by department, looking at the needs, especially because last year we cut out almost every single capital project from departments because of COVID and the unfamiliarity with this type of pandemic, but also how it affects local government budgets. So we're trying to put pieces of that back in right now. And we're also optimistic that funding will carry over maybe a little better than we had hoped.
Now, part of the discussion, of course, is salary for city employees, compensation packages, recruitment and retention. The city, the county, and really the region have been impacted by the opening of new organizations within the region that are offering benefit packages that are more, bigger than what the city had offered in the past. And that's something that every entity is taking into effect. You know, why would you want to work in, this particular business if you can go to a different business and work and make more money with better benefits? So the city is really having to take that into consideration with the next year's budget. What are some things that you're proposing to change at this point?
A priority of mine from day one has really been recruitment and retention for city employees across the board. A lot of that focus has shifted to emergency services because I know that's where it is hardest to find people to fill jobs. So our focus is still across the board, but maybe with a priority in those areas. One thing that we've seen other cities start to do is to provide, we're kind of calling it sign-on incentives. So for areas like law enforcement, if you can find people who are already trained, that's a benefit to the city, one for cost, because it is very expensive to train people. And it also takes a lot of time. So finding people that are trained is of interest. So what we're exploring now is the option to offer some form of a sign-on incentive to kind of recruit people into the area.
That seems to be a common practice that's happening in a lot of fields. I know that I've seen a lot of notices that medical facilities are doing that for people who are already trained, for nurses and doctors and things like that. And that seems to be common practice in certain fields, but unheard of in others. And so the commonality, bringing those two things together, seems like it's something that's going to be expected long term.
I agree. And I also think it's really a good use of taxpayer dollars. I mean, if we can spend just a fraction of the amount to bring someone in that's already trained versus the significant amount you're going to spend on someone to train them, you're doing a service to taxpayers.
Yeah, absolutely. I know that there were quite a few things on the agenda that were discussed by City Council in new business as far as approvals of ordinances and resolutions. A lot of those have to do with the Inspiration Center, with the new Recovery Kentucky facility. That's basically allowing the city to act as kind of a flow-through.
So the Moorhead Inspiration Center, these are type of annual resolutions and updates that we do. So in order to apply for a community block grant, CDBG is how it's often referred to in our agendas as well, you have to go through local government, whether that's the city or the county. So when the Moorhead Inspiration Center first started here, in order for them to get that block grant funding, it was funneled through the city. The city has to be the applicant. And so you resubmit these documents every year and add in some resolutions as well. And that's what most of these are referring to.
Now, one thing that we haven't really talked about specifically, and it's funny because we usually talk about this first, the pandemic, the coronavirus, and the impact on the community here in Moorhead. The numbers are kind of staying lower. People are getting vaccinated. I'm not sure about testing. I haven't really seen testing numbers as of late. But as far as from your point of view as the city leader, how are people doing within this community as far as the pandemic goes?
I'm really proud of our community. I continue to be proud of the community and also reassured. So our numbers are staying low, which is encouraging. We still want people to get tested. We still want people who have not been vaccinated to do so. And we still want people to wear masks. So just because you're not positive or you've been vaccinated, you still need to wear masks just to be safe. And again, this is very unprecedented. The CDC is learning every day new information. So I think it's very important that we continue to social distance, follow CDC guidelines, wear masks when appropriate. And I think we'll continue to see those low numbers if people continue to follow that guidance.
I made a trip to a retail establishment within the community, which I won't name, and saw a lot of people who were not wearing masks. And that was disappointing because, you know, for me, I'm vaccinated. I'm still not to my, like, 2 weeks after date just yet, but still wearing a mask. And I've been wearing a mask since the pandemic started. But there still are a lot of people who are hard to convince to do that. And it's difficult to convince them to get vaccinated as well.
It is. And I think that's the message here. And what we really want people to remember is just because you've been vaccinated does not mean that you shouldn't wear a mask. You know, it's another step. It's another layer of security, but you still have to take precautions.
And on that note, that's all the time we have here on Open Mic. Mayor of Moorhead, Laura White Brown, I appreciate you spending time with us today.
I appreciate you. Thank you.
Thanks for tuning in to Open Mic. Our show is produced by Greg Jenkins, and our theme music is Turtle in the Creek, composed by Galen Green and performed by The Wooks. Produced by Moorhead State Public Radio with the generous support of listeners just like you. We'll see you next Friday.